Good morning, Connecticut, and to our friends across the Sound. This is Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Thanks for tuning in to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Well, I'm not sure if you heard all the bells and whistles going off on November 1st, but on that date, November 1st, Governor Ned Lamont and Insurance Commissioner Andrew N. Mayes, who is a guest of ours here on For the People occasionally, announced that the open enrollment period for Connecticut residents seeking to enroll in health insurance plans for 2025 with Access Health CT, the state's official health insurance marketplace, had opened. So we are in open enrollment period, and it runs through January 15th. And we're going to be talking all about that in this segment this morning with our guest, Carolyn Ruitt from Access Health CT. We're going to get right into the conversation. But since Veterans Day is Monday, tomorrow, as we're playing this segment, we want to reach out to veteran business owners, aspiring veteran business owners and entrepreneurs, because the SBA Lender Expo is coming to Waterbury, and you're invited to come meet lenders and find funding to help build your dream or take it to the next level. If you need funding to expand your business, purchase a building, new equipment, or you just need working capital, you can take advantage of this free opportunity. You can also get help with your business plan or other business activities and learn about no-cost business counseling from SBA Resource Partners. It's all happening Friday, November 15th from 9 a.m. to noon at Connecticut State Naugatuck Valley, just off I-84 at exit 18 in Waterbury. The expo and parking are free and walk-in are encouraged. You can also learn more or register by visiting ctsbdc.ucon.edu. All right, let's say hello to Carolyn Ruitt. Carolyn, thanks for joining us on the show this morning. So this is the period of the year that all you folks at Access Health CT start gearing up for the day open enrollment closes. And indeed, just a few days ago, it opened again. So really appreciate you coming on and helping brief all of our listeners about how to get involved if they've never been insured before, and maybe if they want to explore some new options. So let's get down and talk about it. First of all, tell us a little bit about yourself. What brought you to Access Health CT? Had you worked in the insurance industry before?
Yeah, thanks for having me, John. Really appreciate it. I have worked in the insurance industry before on the property and casualty side, but I'm really, really passionate about health insurance. And I've been at Access Health CT for about 3.5 years now, heading up the marketing department. So I get to do some really fun stuff in terms of creating our advertising campaigns, updating our website, blog content, things like emails and newsletters that go out to folks. And I've got a great team behind me. So we're really passionate about our mission, which is to reduce the rate of the uninsured and to eliminate health disparities. It's really something that we can all get behind because everybody needs access to health care.
Great. Over the period of time that you've been doing this, and with all of the, the different ways that people learn about something like Access Health CT and the opportunities that you provide for them to get the health insurance that they need, how are you finding your biggest successes in targeting the folks who you want to reach most? Do you find that that social network marketing is working well for you, or the types of campaigns that you've crafted that, full disclosure, have also played and will continue to play on all our radio stations?
Yeah, we really appreciate your support and the opportunity to connect with consumers. And, you know, folks really have changed their media consumption habits, or really where they get their news or things that impact their lives. And yes, social networking sites are a big part of that. But there's also a lot of traditional ways that folks get their news, whether it's through, you know, terrestrial radio, that traditional AM or FM, or streaming, Spotify or Hulu, or, you know, on podcasts. Same thing with TV, right? Some people watch that primetime must-see TV still, but some others, you know, have completely cut that cord and they're really only using different streaming services. And so we've really evaluated our marketing program over the years and made some changes based on, you know, how Connecticut residents consume their media. But we like to be as many places as we can. And now that we're in our 12th open enrollment period, so 12 years now supporting Connecticut residents and giving them opportunities for health insurance, we've also learned a lot along the way, right? We have a lot more data now that tells us not only what types of media people are using, but also where there are pockets of the uninsured throughout the state or where there are underserved communities that might need our help more than others. And that changes over time, right, depending on economic conditions, amongst other things. But we like to use a lot of census data, and that really helps us figure things out about where we need to be. And so, you know, we target certain communities more than others to make sure that, you know, the people who need us know where we are, what we offer, and how they can get help. And what that means during the open enrollment period is a lot more presence throughout the community. So we're not just on TV and radio and billboards and things like that. We also offer a lot of free in-person assistance. And that's really critical for your listeners to know. All help is free at Access Health CT. And you can go to our website, accesshealthct.com, and click on Get Help, and you'll find a ton of resources about where to get help. You can call our call center at 855-805-4325, and there's help in more than 100 languages. Or maybe you want to go to an enrollment fair or an enrollment event in your community. We host a variety of different types of events where you can come and get one-on-one help. And we also offer help in English and Spanish at these events. So lots of opportunities for Connecticut residents, no matter what type of media you're listening to or watching, you can always come to our website and find a place to get help.
So according to the data that you've been blessed with being able to track for so long and so comprehensively, what are you finding in terms of the have-nots, so to speak? Who are the audiences that you hope to reach based on the hard data that they both may not be getting the information that they need to be able to act, but also exposing them to the education about Access Health CT and all the different ways that they may not just only qualify to obtain a great health insurance package for themselves and or their loved ones, but also to take advantage of collateral programs that may help save them money?
Yeah, that's a really good point. Over the last couple of years in particular, we've expanded our health equity and outreach department based on a couple of studies that we've done on the uninsured rate as well as health disparities throughout our state. And while we are, you know, one of the top wealthiest states, there's actually a big divide. So there are a lot of haves and have-nots within our state. And so by expanding our health equity and outreach department, we're better able to partner with community programs across the state to help carry our message. We're an organization of just about 100 people, and that's across a lot of different departments, including things like, you know, finance and operations and things like that. And so our team's just not big enough to be everywhere where the state needs us to be. But the good news is that we have over 2,000 community partners, nonprofit type organizations, community health centers, and things like that that we communicate to on the regular. We host things called Healthy Chats, which are opportunities throughout the year for people in certain communities to come in and learn what health insurance is. Maybe you've just never been exposed to it before and you don't know if this is for you. Maybe you're somebody that's traditionally had health insurance through an employer-sponsored plan, right? That's how most Americans have health insurance, is through their employer. But for some reason, you may not have that as an opportunity anymore. Maybe you lost your job. Maybe you decided to start your own business and you're a one-person solopreneur, as they call them. You know, there's a lot of different reasons why you might find yourself without health insurance, whether you know what it is or you don't know what it is. And these community organizations where people go for other types of community supports, whether they need, you know, help finding housing, or maybe they need some energy assistance, or maybe they just move to the community and they're doing just fine economically, but they don't have health insurance and they need that. We're able to partner with those community organizations. So as folks come in, whether they're looking for health insurance or for something else, we're able to introduce the topic to them and let them know that we're here as a resource and we might be available for them. And we really concentrate those efforts, to your point, now that we have a lot of data about our communities, where there are more dense populations of the uninsured throughout our state. We've got a really great resource on our website for health equity. It's a heat map with different colors across the state based on the geography where there are more uninsured targets. So we're really transparent about this information as well. And if you're interested in kind of supporting the cause, you can take a look at that data and kind of see the different communities that are more uninsured than others as well.
So Caroline, you mentioned folks who may have stepped out on their own and away from an employer-sponsored health plan to, become entrepreneurial or to start their own businesses. Does Access Health CT provide resources for those individuals as well as maybe the 1, 2, 3, 4 employees that they might have?
Yeah, it's a really great point. And we do. We have an individual program, and that's what the open enrollment period is. So if you're looking for coverage for just yourself and the people in your household, now is the time to enroll in that, and you have until January 15th to do so. But we also have a small business program, and small businesses, if you're providing health insurance for yourself as well as several employees, that's when you become eligible for what we call our SHOP program. And that is something that folks can enroll in at any time of the year. They just need to engage with our SHOP folks. They're not subject to that special enrollment period. So lots of opportunities for Connecticut residents. And I think this is important, especially for those people out there that maybe are thinking about starting a business, but they might be hesitant to go ahead and do that because they're not sure how that they would get covered. This is a great opportunity. And to your point, John, it can scale up with you as your business gets to be more successful. And it's not just maybe you and your spouse or something like that in the business, and you start to employ other people. Access Health CT can be there with you and really help you along the way and make sure that you have all the right coverage options for you when you need it.
Great. And now shifting our focus over to another group of people, those who have been on the Access Health CT partnership for a long time, perhaps since its inception here in Connecticut, or who may have gone on and off and are on again. Is there a opportunity for them during the open enrollment period to make adjustments to coverage that they have, or maybe expand the type of coverage I have? I know there's some need to mention dental insurance through Access Health CT.
Yeah. So a couple of things there. It's really important, whether it's during the open enrollment period or not throughout the year, if you have a health coverage plan through Access Health CT, if you have any change to your household demographics, such as maybe there's more people in your household, maybe you welcomed a new baby, or maybe your income has changed. Hopefully that's for the better. Sometimes it's not, but regardless, you want to go ahead and you want to update those personal details about yourself, because that can change the availability or how much you get. So it's really important to do that as soon as a change like that happens. And yes, there's lots of different types of coverage, whether you've been a customer with us or not in the past. Whether you're a customer now or not, if you are interested in becoming one, like I said, this is the open enrollment period. And I do want to call out a level of specificity for that deadline. You must enroll actually by December 15th if you want coverage starting January 1st. You can enroll on December 16th through January 15th, but your coverage will not start until February 1st. So there's a really important part of that deadline, right? So the key takeaway to know is enroll now or before December 15th if you want to have coverage for the whole year. And that's for your health coverage or your dental coverage. And you mentioned, John, the opportunity to get dental coverage through Access Health CT. And that's something that a lot of people don't know about. And it's really, you know, something that's important to do. It's a really important indicator of your overall health. And so take care of your dental needs. And this is for people who are enrolling in health coverage with us. You can add what's called a standalone dental plan to increase your coverage there. And it's also available to people who have coverage elsewhere. For example, you might be an employee of a small business that offers you a health coverage plan, but maybe they just don't have the resources to provide a dental plan for you. You can come to accesshealthct.com and select a dental plan alone. That's it. You can get just a dental plan from us if that's all you need. And that's not something that a lot of Connecticut residents know. And I'm going to add one more layer on that, John. Even Medicare eligible folks can get a dental plan from Access Health CT. And that's important because Medicare doesn't typically have strong dental coverage. And, you know, as we age, we have dental needs. And sometimes they get, you know, more and more complicated. Sure. So, you know, folks might not have the financial resources to take part on the other parts of Medicare that increase your coverage. But we find that the dental plans available through Access Health CT are pretty affordable. And it's a great opportunity for those folks who might be looking for a little bit more coverage in that area, but aren't sure where to go. So dental is a great option. Whether you have health or health coverage with another resource, you are still able to come to Access Health CT and purchase that dental coverage. So check it out if you're interested.
Yeah, we also mentioned the possibility of getting some financial assistance.
Oh, I'm so glad you brought that up. That's something that a lot of people aren't aware about, Access Health CT. We're actually the only place where you can go in the state to get financial help that helps you pay towards the cost of your health insurance plan. And that comes in a couple of different ways. First is something called an advanced premium tax credit. It's just a fancy way of saying a way for the financial help to help you pay for that monthly cost to have your coverage. It's known as a premium. So it helps offset that monthly payment and reduce that so it becomes more affordable for you. The other type of financial help is called a cost-sharing reduction. And what that does is it helps offset the cost when you go and you get care. So think about things like a copay when you go and you visit a doctor's office for a sick visit. Or maybe you're on prescriptions and you need to have that, regular prescription that you go and you pick up and you have a copay there. Those cost sharing reductions help reduce the cost when you go and you get care or a prescription. And there's a couple of different factors that determine whether you get financial help and how much. And it's these three things primarily. One, how many people are in your household? Two, how much you make, what your income is, and three, where you live. And those are all things that are required in your application to enter in, and then we determine what you're eligible for. And all of that information is available at accesshealthct.com. And if you're not familiar enough with our website or want a little help, again, there's a whole host of ways to get help in person and have somebody help you with that application as well. So lots of great information available to folks.
Yeah. And finally, one of the populations that we would like to make sure we mention are our DACA recipients and their eligibility.
Yes. Yeah. So in the past, DACA recipients were not eligible to purchase health insurance on state-based exchanges or the federal marketplace throughout the country. In May, the federal government passed a law that took effect starting November 1st, and DACA recipients are now eligible to purchase health insurance through the exchanges. And here in Connecticut, it's Access Health CT. So folks are now considered lawfully present if they have that DACA recipient status. And it is important, John, to mention that a lot of folks call themselves dreamers, right? The children of immigrants that have come into this country. If you are a dreamer, sometimes folks call them DACA, sometimes they call them dreamers, and there actually really is a differentiation. DACA recipients have an official status from the government. It's similar to, immigration papers and documents like that. And so you need to have that official status from the government in order to be eligible. So that's a really important thing for folks to know. And also, folks get a little bit concerned about sharing their information, especially if they're here as an immigrant. And so we totally understand that. And I want to stress to folks who might be listening and interested in seeing if they're eligible for coverage, but they might be scared or afraid. We do not share our information with anybody other than the Department of Social Services and accesshealthct.com. Purely for the purpose of determining whether or not you're eligible for health care. So that information is not going anywhere else, and there wouldn't be any other consequence of you sharing that information with us other than you enrolling or not enrolling in health coverage. So thank you for sharing that information, and thank you for the opportunity to provide some additional details about it.
Very good. So to recap, Access Health CT is reminding us that open enrollment is happening now through January 15th. However, you need to enroll by December 15th if you want your coverage to begin January 1st. If you enroll after on December 16th and up to January 15th. Coverage begins February 1st. There's all kinds of ways to get information about everything that we talked about on the program today. And it all starts at accesshealthct.com. And I want to thank you, Caroline Ruitt, our friend from Access Health CT, for briefing us on everything we need to know right now about open enrollment and some of the new opportunities available through Connecticut's only health insurance marketplace, Access Health CT. Caroline, thank you so much for your time today. Well, we've made another new friend today on the award-winning For the People. I'm so excited to make the acquaintance of Emily Ong, and she is with an organization called Girls Who Code. So we're going to tell you all about that. But first, we want to talk about Girls Who Sell Cookies. That's right. No matter what your political party affiliation, all people can agree that Girl Scout cookies get the top vote as the tastiest treat. Now through election week, Girl Scouts of Connecticut are giving people delicious reasons to come out to the polls and to visit local businesses because they're hosting cookie booths at various voting locations throughout the state. More than 300 booths will be available through next Sunday, November 10th, and many of these Girl Scouts are also participating in the Girl Scouts of Connecticut's Gift of Caring Service Project, which is called Cookies for Heroes, where you can purchase cookies to be delivered to active military men and women, veterans, and local community heroes. Last year, 125,000 packages of those cookies were sold just for this cause. So we hope you can get out there and support all the incredible things that Girl Scouts of Connecticut are doing for our young women here in Connecticut. And if you want to get your Girl Scout cookie fix up to November 10th, you can find out all the different locations of where that is happening at gsofct.org. Okay, so here we go. Very pleased, as I said, to make the acquaintance of Emily Ong with Girls Who Code. That's a renowned nonprofit dedicating to closing the gender gap in tech. They're building the largest pipeline of future female technologists in the country, and they've already served over 670,000 girls, young women, and non-binary individuals to date, including 218,000 alumni through their pipeline of free programs from third grade through early career. So that sums up the boilerplate, Emily. Thank you for joining us. Let's turn our attention to our conversation here. And first, a little bit about yourself. Were you sort of a computer coding or math or other STEM interest nerd coming up as a younger person?
That's a great question, John, and so excited to be here. I am an aspiring coder. I've always been interested in technology, but actually formally before Girls Who Code came more from the educational equity space, longtime advocate of young people and becoming change makers in their respective interests and passions. So that's really what brought me to Girls Who Code, finding ways to use the coding skills. But like true Girls Who Code fashion, we always find ways to connect it back with social justice impact and finding a way to make a positive impact in the community. So that's really what drew me to Girls Who Code. And because I joined, now I'm learning coding through our free programs as well. We have a little Girls Who Code club in our office. So I've been learning data science and Python and Scratch. So it's been a very fun journey that I'm excited to continue on.
Well, great. Talk more about that, Emily, and the organization itself. Was this around a long time before you found it, or was it like a brand new thing that you came across and were like, oh, I want to get in on this at the ground level?
Yeah, that's a good question. So we were founded in 2012, and it really was at the start or the initiation of this movement for STEM and movement for, you know, increasing representation in this space. So we were really pioneering a lot of that work at that time in 2012 with that mission, of course, like you mentioned, to close the gender gap in technology. And we really want to change that image of what a programmer looks like and does. So we've been around a while. We've had multiple iterations and innovations to really drive our work forward, especially with cutting edge technology, really changing the way that we work on, you know, such a quick basis. And so I got started at Girls Who Code about 7 years ago in 2017, in its kind of teenager phase, essentially, to be able to continue growing the organization. We've scaled extremely quickly, you know, since we started out with 20 girls in a small classroom, partnered with a company partner who donated their space and taught them coding over a summer program. And now with that 670,000 we've served, you know, the number keeps going up because we know the demand is there for the students and the demand is there for, you know, the workforce they want to go into. So we're happy to meet that there.
So where are you and where is this organization? Where does this organization call home?
Yeah, we're an international organization. So we do serve students all around the country internationally as well. Now we have a main office in New York where most of our staff are located, but we're sprinkled really throughout the full country as well.
All around the globe,
And we serve students all over.
So as far as you're concerned, 7-ish years you've been with the organization, and you mentioned, needing to be cutting edge at all times because, you know, the old cliche is the minute you acquire something, it is almost become obsolete. So in the 7 years that you've been with the organization, let's hear a little bit about how it has really worked so hard to try to, pivot in the right direction when they see new things coming, including, bubbles of interest or any kind of public initiative that is created across the world of Girls Who Code and the communities where the girls come from, where there are these like maybe concentrations of promotions or projects or efforts on a hyper-local level to really push young women into these STEM fields, and Girls Who Code is actually a fantastic, partner or supplement to that.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I would say, you know, when we started, it was very much an in-person summer immersion program, small different classrooms in different company partner locations in major cities. It's such a fantastic program. It's been longstanding for us, which is fantastic. We see a lot of growth. But immediately, you know, in 2013, that's when we said, okay, how are these students learning all year round? How do we not only spark that interest, but how do we persist that interest throughout their entire educational journey and into their professional careers? And so because of that, then we started hearing from different schools and libraries that oftentimes it's hard to access free curriculum, free resources to push this forward, especially when, you know, when our generation was growing up, we weren't learning these different pieces yet, you know, and so in our own educational training, we might not have as much skill sets, you know, in these areas to be able to teach the students. And so we said, okay, hey, how do we create an after-school clubs program where we give literally everything under the sun to a teacher, a librarian, you know, anyone in the space, even Girl Scouts troop leaders, YMCA leaders, whoever it might be, where they can access these free materials and help students learn all year long. So we created a program that was for 6th to 12th graders, then it expanded to 3rd to 5th graders as well, so that way we can really support students at every single part of their journey. That's been really impactful, and that's been a great way for us to be innovative by constantly adjusting our curriculum based on what we're seeing in the tech space, but also in the community. And that's also been a way we've been able to be very hyper-local as well. Mm. We partner with over 670 different school districts, library networks, nonprofit organizations, both locally and nationally, to help drive this work because they also believe in what we do and want to access these free resources to help fuel the mission forward. Mm. But then not only that, once we had those students, we needed to say, okay, our alumni, they're finally getting older. They're now in college and now they're in early career. We've developed programs every step along the way after hearing from alumni. So if they say, hey, it's been really hard to address the technical interview process or how to navigate the space in a professional setting, we're like, okay, great. We're adjusting, innovating, creating new programs to really meet them where they're at and meet the needs of the moment, essentially. And especially with AI now, we're at an exciting time as an organization with our strategic plan to refresh our vision for the next 5 years, reach 5 million more girls, non-binary students, and young women to help drive this work by scaling our programs, infusing even more cutting-edge technology and AI into our curriculum, activities, and work, and then also thinking about how are we supporting our alumni in persisting in this space. So lots has happened over the past 12 years, but we know it's important, and that is why. And so our team works really hard to make sure everyone's supported around the world.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, and it makes complete sense that one of your prime partners are libraries, because as you and I have seen, even over the past 7 years that you've been with Girls Who Code, so many libraries across the country are still coming to grips with kind of the shift, like from video to stream, you know, sort of from like Netflix in the mail to streaming, like, you know, it's a sea change there. So libraries are beginning to become much more responsive to both trying to support businesses, especially advanced businesses, in their communities and in their states, but also to help to try to connect young people to career opportunities in those businesses. So the library end makes sense from a corporate partner standpoint. Certainly their altruism is evident and absolutely necessary and justified, but selfishly too, you know, it's kind of like you know, the scouts going down to South America to look for high school baseball players. You know, it's like you get middle school and high school young women into these coding classes in with these corporate partners, and maybe they're like, wow, you know, there's the next, you know, mastermind of coding, and she's sitting right here in our offices. We should make sure our human resources department knows about her.
Yeah. Exactly. And honestly, I mean, you touched upon two things I always get really excited about. One is the work that libraries do. They do so much. And like you said, you know, oftentimes they're doing so much. And so how can we support them in really being hubs in the community? Two of, you know, some of my favorite partnerships are the Long Island Library Resource Council, as well as the Connecticut State Library, that they both support, you know, so many different libraries across Connecticut and Long Island in particular. But they've been fantastic. And I think, you know, it's a great way to say, hey, okay, perfect. How can we continue to be, you know, at the forefront, so we could be a tech hub also for our community and what they need now? So that's been great to see. And like you said, the partners too, the companies we work with, see that direct translation in the community through the work that we do, but also see the direct access to the hiring pipeline, like you mentioned. I mean, a lot of the corporate partners we have, and that could be a range of every single industry, because really tech touches upon everything. We partner with folks who invest in our work and think about, okay, how can I have meaningful engagements with these students? We have volunteer opportunities, you know, around either virtually or in person. We have, you know, branding and visibility opportunities to showcase different companies so students can know how to explore these careers and that these careers exist in so many different types of ways. And then also the hiring pipeline access, where we have, you know, like you mentioned, the 218,000 college and career ready alumni, they're ready to go for jobs and internship opportunities and have the training to really thrive in those roles. And the background, you know, we not only teach our young people the technical skills, but we also want to think about, okay, how are we building their confidence, their resilience, their bravery, their leadership skills and public speaking skills? All these different pieces that are equally as important as the technical aspects. And that's what really helps them thrive in those different roles with our companies. And so they're able to come in and really see that tangible impact. One of our company partners, for example, they've been renewing, you know, their partnership with us every single year, and they've hired over 100 of our students over the past like 2 years, which is great to see. They even have a community of students, you know, within that company. It helps them build, you know, more diverse thought and value in their work. So we see that direct translation, and we're hoping to, you know, that continues as we, you know, close that gender gap in tech. And right now we're on track, you know, to close the gender gap in entry-level tech jobs by 2030 through those partnerships.
Well, that's great. Well, we're going to ask parents to cover their kids' ears now, because we're going to introduce the S word. I'm interested in now knowing how people like you, Emily, and your colleagues at Girls Who Code are addressing the stigma issue and working toward destigmatizing this idea that this kind of career track and this level of attention to this type of you know, STEM family of you know, learning is not the right place necessarily for a young woman or non-binary person to go?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, you know, we're trying to face those stigmas and change those perceptions all the time. You know, I think for us, we know, and AI could be scary, to be honest. You know, I think there's always that thought as well. But I think when these new technologies are used ethically and with human design in mind, I think we can make really transformative change for our lives and the people who we love. And also, you know, there's not only, I think, that kind of societal element there, but also in terms of the students and, you know, like parents thinking about it for their kids, STEM jobs pay 26% more than other careers. You know, there's so much room for economic growth and movement here. And there's, you know, it's the fastest growing industry or occupation in the country. I think we're expected to add, you know, more than 500,000 jobs between now and 2029, according to a research study. So we know there's growth out there. But at this point in time, you know, we need more girls, young women and non-binary folks in the space. There's only women hold only 21% of computing degrees. They're only 25% of the tech workforce. They're actually only in 5% of leadership roles in tech. And we want to change that. And we know that there's opportunity there because of that disparity. So how do we get our young people there? And we often do that through representation. We often say, you know, you cannot be what you cannot see. And so how do we get representation in front of these students? How do we get them a sisterhood or a network of community of peers and role models to help them, encourage them and help them persist? And then how do we think about connecting these skills to what they care about? You know, students have so many wide variety of passions, and they don't just have to think about, you know, what they might envision in their head as a traditional, you know, tech person. They could do anything, be in any single industry. So if they're passionate about building a website on environmental issues or an app around, you know, water conservation or, you know, educational equity, literally could be anything. But it's all really helpful in service of each other and in service of making the world a better place.
Yeah. And the other thing that is of interest is, more and more over the past decade, we're seeing studies showing the critical importance of the thought patterns and voices that, women and non-binary people are bringing into a male-dominated STEM environment, engineering, you know, manufacturing workforce, advanced manufacturing, or other technical fields. So this is really a movement whose time has come and is of critical need. So looking forward in the last minute or so that we have with you, Emily, what is in store next for Girls Who Code? What's the next big goal that you guys are going after?
Yeah, it's a good question. Right now, it's a really exciting time for us. We're embarking on our new strategic plan, which is essentially outlining our vision for the next 5 years as we scale our programs, infuse more cutting-edge technology, and think about supporting our alumni who persist in this space. So we're always looking for students at any age to get involved, join our programs, access all of these things completely for free with stipends, grants, and even tech access if they need it. You know, it doesn't hurt, and it helps them to network with different companies and really build a pathway for their career, no matter what age they're starting with. So we encourage them to join us. For the teachers, educators, librarians, et cetera, you know, definitely access our free resources. It's such a great supplement to what they're doing already, or a great way for them to have a standalone program without the very minimal prep time, which we know is always precious. and the companies or larger school districts and folks on a larger level, always happy to partner with folks and see how we can be, you know, this really collective community to make a more transformative impact together.
If you happen to know a young woman or non-binary person who might be interested in learning more, we would certainly love to have you visit and maybe even consider donating to Girls Who Code at girlswhocode.com. This renowned global nonprofit is dedicated to closing the gender gap in tech. We're building the largest pipeline of future female technologists in the U.S. in partnership with this organization. And they've already served almost 750,000 girls, young women, and non-binary individuals to date, including 218,000 alumni through the pipeline of free programs from third grade on through early career. Emily Ong has been our guest this morning, talking so excitedly and articulately about this cause. You've got to get involved, people. We've got to get young women and non-binary people into our workforce here in Connecticut, across the country, and around the world. And Girls Who Code is helping to make that happen. So get to know them. Emily, I'm glad I got to know you. Thank you so much for your time this morning. Well, you've heard our conversations recently with our friend Mark Donald. He's president and CEO of Catalyst Connecticut, but the organization that he heads up has been a resource to our listeners and our program for many, many decades under their former handle of RIASAP. We are going to come back and talk about how the new brand is faring under Mark's leadership, as well as an incredible new program that you're going to want to hear about, because, hey, we've heard the studies. We know how much music education can impact the positive outcomes in people's lives, just like any element of education. And with that in mind, we want to remind you about another great new program that's happening up in the New Haven area, the Yale Teaching Fellowship, funded by Yale University and coming out of the Yale and Slavery Research Project, is supporting New Haven's efforts to increase their teacher diversity. Yale University, in partnership with New Haven Public Schools, New Haven Promise, and Southern Connecticut State University, has developed this fellowship to support graduate study for current and aspiring educators in exchange for at least 3 years of service in the New Haven Public Schools. The program aims to place more than 100 diverse teachers with master's degrees in the city's schools in the coming years. Applicants from diverse backgrounds who meet eligibility requirements must apply by January 1st, and you can begin your journey to exploring this opportunity at yale.edu/teaching-fellow-program. All right, onward to Mark and Catalyst CT. Mark, this organization has worked so long and so hard to diligently be part of the solution to reducing youth and gun violence, to advocate for healthier communities, and to create a positive impact that extends far beyond today for the under-resourced and underserved youth, family, and neighborhoods throughout southwestern Connecticut and beyond. So since we first spoke with you a short time after the branding change, how have things been going over there at Catalyst CT?
Well, John, thanks for having me. Yeah, things have been going a mile a minute. There's a lot of demand for our services, and when we're able to form some great partnerships the one we're going to talk about in a few minutes, the opportunities to help young people succeed and have communities be a little bit healthier are abounding, and we're excited to continue working on them.
We've got this exciting new program in partnership with Park City Presents to talk about in just a few minutes. But in the meantime, what are a couple of the other new and exciting things that are going on at Catalyst CT, other partnerships, programmings, or plans to launch programs in 2025?
There's a lot of really good things in the works. One project we're really excited about and have been working on for about a year now is our Amplifying Resident Voices project. That is a partnership with us, Catalyst Connecticut, Fairfield University, and PT Partners. And PT Partners is a resident-led nonprofit that is about community organizing and building strength within public housing units in Bridgeport. And we're talking to the residents of public housing on what are their ideas to eliminate gun violence in their communities. And then Fairfield U is taking the results of the focus groups. They're going to analyze it. And then over here at Catalyst, in partnership with PT Partners and Fairfield University, we are going to implement those solutions and then study to see what works and what is not working and what can work better, to continue to iterate it. The great thing about that is that's funded privately by an innovative foundation, the Tau Foundation, who's been a strong supporter of ours for many years.
Mm. And I know we're going to be talking about this live music production apprenticeship program, but I love how you folks are utilizing the arts as a point of contact and a point of inspiration for so many young people. And with that in mind, you recently also hosted a student art exhibition.
Yeah, I think that's part of our goals is to, and part of our day-to-day work is to recognize and meet people where they are. And so many of the young people that we work with, their passions haven't been activated because we focus on it from a deficit mindset, right? For a young person in school who might be having behavioral problems or discipline issues, we try and teach them how to behave instead of activating what they're strong and passionate about that's going to lead them to make more disciplined and better decisions on their own. So the art exhibit focused on some of the young people in our diversionary program who had committed some misdemeanors, and we're trying to keep them out of the court system and put them on a path to success. So we meet them with their interest in art, whether it's painting or photography. And in this particular situation, we partnered with Housatonic Community College, now known as CT State Housatonic, and one of their professors to teach our young people photography. So using photography as the, pardon the pun, the lens for their own art and outlook, they can choose the content. You know, there were some amazing pictures of bugs, for all things, where young people just They saw an opportunity to put their unique stamp on it and show the beauty in that. So we had 8 young people do an exhibition at CT State Housatonic, and we had about 75 people come through and look at it, and then provided them with their own cameras so that they can take that passion beyond the art exhibit, whether they become professional photographers or just really enjoy it as a hobby. It's something that we have activated their passions with.
Yeah. Well, with our plans to air this conversation that we're having right now, Mark, on Sunday, the 10th of November, you're already into a month-long initiative of providing extremely easy to access naloxone training, having had your first one last Wednesday, November 6th, and having one also coming up on Tuesday, November 19th. Obviously, this is another critical area that your organization is really sort of taking the bull by the horns to address, and the life-saving potential and the difference it can make, not just having naloxone on their persons or in their cars or with them when they're out and about, but for people to know how to use it is so critically important.
Absolutely. And that's an ongoing effort that we've been charged with by the state of Connecticut to administer these Narcan, also known by its generic term, naloxone trainings that help revive people who have been exposed to fentanyl or other opioid overdoses, whether intentional or not. And our philosophy is based on harm reduction, which has shown to work in giving people the opportunity to recover from an overdose, again, whether they're struggling with substance use disorder, which is the proper term for addiction these days, or it's an accident. You know, we feel strongly that people need the opportunity to engage in recovery, whether they overdose multiple times, again, or it's accidental. And part of this is making sure that citizens who are immune from any kind of prosecution for administering naloxone, as well as you can't overdose on naloxone anyway. Right. But it's important for us to educate the community on these things so that that people are armed, for lack of a better word, with the tools to help people survive. And as the CEO of the organization, I actually was trained last week and am, you know, hopefully I'll never have to use it. Yeah. But like CPR, if you have the tool and you use it successfully, you've enabled somebody to live a longer life.
Very good. Well, as we're just passing about the midpoint of our conversation this morning, Mark, let's turn back to our promised focus. And that is on a brand new partnership with Park City Presents. So before we dig into the nuts and bolts of how you're ramping up this live music production apprenticeship program, tell us a little bit about your journey to discovering the partnership with Park City Presents.
Oh, like many good things, it comes out of relationships and conversations. And I was talking with John Torres, who is well-known within the Bridgeport Black Rock community, mm-hmm. One of the proprietors over at Park City Music Hall. And he was talking about his emerging nonprofit called Park City Presents. And I said, oh my goodness, this is the true workforce development that needs to happen where so many young people are passionate about music. What do you think? So John and I put our heads together and then we got our teams together and we did, at the time, was a one-off event with some of our program people where he brought in some of his musician buddies, some of his, production, lighting and sound professionals. Mm-hmm. And we brought our kids over and we did a workshop with it. And I mean, it was in the best classroom that ever could have happened, which is at Park City Music Hall, with industry professionals. And the energy that both our young people and the professionals got off each other, musicians, was incredible. And so outcome of that is John, and Mark and our teams got in a room and we said, what can we do? And then you have organizations like Fairfield County's Community Foundation who are willing to invest in innovative partnerships. So that's where we are and that's how it came to be.
So this is predominantly targeting 16 to 8-year-olds from these under-resourced neighborhoods. So let's talk a little bit about how you see this partnership in this program progressing, because this isn't just a one-off, bring a bunch of kids in, give them a workshop, and then let the chips fall where they may. This is a curriculum.
Yeah, it's a curriculum. And I think the good thing about any partnership is you take advantage of each other's strengths. And, over at Park City Presents, they're building a curriculum that's going to be engaging, that supports the industry, as well as young people who might want to become industry professionals. So they learn these skills that are marketable, that they can take, whether they, become gig workers and go from venue to venue to do, live music production and audio or lighting, or something that they can also use as a hobby. So they engage in the curriculum. And then on our end, we are working with the young people to ensure their success beyond engaging in the program. So once they finish with the curriculum, okay, let's help them with those interview skills. Let's help them with the soft skills where they're engaging and showing up on a daily basis and doing a great job on the site so that they can progress up the ladder and have a life sustaining wage, a meaningful job that they're truly passionate about, because that's when the success happens.
Yeah. And to recognize that aligning the mentors and instructors for these softer skills who may already have experience in the music industry or music production, they're going to be able to help these young people not only gain the hands-on experience and build the skill set to do the jobs here in our rapidly expanding world of festivals, theaters, small pop-up art spaces, concert halls, and of course, restaurants, nightclubs, and such. But they'll also be helping them kind of walk the talk with the right language and the right style when they're pursuing the application stage and the initial entry into this line of work.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think another key thing that can't be undersold is when our young people are doing the work with the artists, musicians, and other, you know, industry professionals, they're actually forming their own contacts. So now there's a show at the Hartford Healthcare Amphitheater. They can go over there and help out, right? There's a show at the Klein Auditorium. There's a show at the Bijou.
Sure, out on McLevy Green, for crying out loud. Any they can parachute in anywhere because the skill set is uniform pretty much across the hardware and the venue. So once you learn how to swing that hammer, you can swing it wherever you go.
There you go. That's a great analogy. They can plug and play wherever they might be needed.
Great. So in the last minute or so that we have with you, Mark, how do people find out more about this? Maybe either to provide additional support so it can become more available to the 16 to 18 year olds who need it most, or to get a 16 to 18 year old that they know into this program.
Yeah. So, I mean, catalystct.org is always the easiest way. We're always looking for, you know, donations that help support paying stipends to these young people, as well as to expand the program. You can also go to our socials at CatalystNCT across all platforms to check out more information. But certainly the easiest way is catalystct.org. Come check us out. And the more champions we have, the better and greater impact we can have on young people in southwestern Connecticut.
Well, certainly we want to encourage people to get to know Park City Presents, because this new nonprofit is committed to enriching Bridgeport through creative arts and music, offering high-quality immersive music and technology education to the city's youth, and bringing live performances by world-class musicians straight to residents. You can learn more about them at parkcitypresents.org. Of course, our friends at the Fairfield County Community Foundation doing amazing work, and this is just another in the series of hundreds and hundreds of ways the Fairfield County Community Foundation is creating a thriving community wherever they land. And of course, Mark, President and CEO of Catalyst CT, working so hard to be part of the solution to reduce youth and gun violence, to advocate for healthier communities, and as you see from this program, creating positive impact that extends far beyond today and far beyond the community of Bridgeport for under-resourced and underserved youth. Mark, thank you so much for your time this morning. Can't wait to chat again. You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for a guest, an issue, or a PSA for our program that's relevant to the audiences and communities we serve, you must make your request for consideration in writing via email to john.vocat@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program can be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station websites. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Vocat. Join us again at this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime. Just find it under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.